This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and today's podcast is brought to you by betonline.ag. Adam, can you believe NFL preseason is underway?
I can believe it. Yeah.
Ready for the regular season to get underway?
I'm ready for the regular season to get underway, honestly, as much. But that said, I think any football, whatever, is worth watching, even if it doesn't really count in terms of wins and losses towards the season. So I'm just enjoying it as it goes.
Well, to celebrate another season kickoff, betonline.ag and CLNS Media are giving you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Head on over to betonline.ag or use your mobile device to join today and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive your welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines this football season. Get into all the action with betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And a minimum $55 deposit is required to qualify for the bonus. I'm going to get better at those reads, I promise. But now that that is out of the way, we've paid the bills, we can talk about some football. And again, we talked about it a little bit last week, just how great it is to talk about games again and not talk about all the other superficial stuff. And we have some more game stuff to unpack here for sure. But we're going to start with the big news of the week, and that is that Josh Gordon is back. Today, Sunday, we're recording this on Sunday night, is the first day that Josh Gordon can report to the Patriots facility. He is back on a conditional basis. That means that there are some conditions about him playing in games, but he's basically a full go in practice starting tomorrow. We'll be out there tomorrow at around 2:00 to see if he is also out there with us. So be on the lookout for that. But Adam, first, just from a big picture standpoint, what is your reaction of Josh Gordon being back in the mix?
I think it's great that he's getting another chance. I think he's obviously a really talented player. And again, when we talked about him last year, it's the same thing. It's, you know, you're excited for him and you're excited that a really talented player is on the team, but you're also sort of wait and see on if he's going to go through the whole season and everything like that. And so you don't know how much you can actually depend on him. Given his track record, unfortunately, it's great, obviously, to have a guy like that on the team, talent-wise and production-wise, when he's on the field. But can he stay on the field? That question is still – I'm still uncertain about that, I think, as are a lot of people. So, you know, it's good to have him back and stuff like that. And I think also it, you know, changes sort of the dynamics of, you know, how some of these guys who have been showing well in the preseason are as far as making the roster and not. But I think it's overall it's a positive thing, but you still have to, you know, sort of question how long the good times will last.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way of putting it. And we'll definitely get to what this means for everybody else at the wide receiver position, because this certainly shakes things up considerably, especially when you throw in the fact that Jacoby Myers is just absolutely on fire. So he's probably going to make the roster no matter what. So now you're really getting down to only like a few spots, maybe even only one spot open for a bunch of guys. We'll get to that in a second. But just quickly, big picture wise with Gordon, I couldn't agree with you more that to start with, you have to consider the fact that the Patriots, this is a necessary risk in my mind for the Patriots. Before the Josh Gordon news came down, last week in Tennessee, when watching joint practices without N'Keal Harry out there, without Philip Dorsett and Mo Harris too, it was kind of getting barren there. You got Tom Brady throwing passes to guys like Gunnar Olszewski and Damon Patterson and Dontrell Inman, who they just released a couple of minutes ago. We knew that that wasn't going to be the group. You know, we knew that that was kind of a dire straits for injuries and stuff like that. But you kind of were looking around, and with the tight end group looking the way that it does too, asking yourself, who is the guy that, other than Julian Edelman, that's going to make a lot of plays for this team? Who's that big play receiver, that explosive receiver down the field? And in comes Josh Gordon, just like kind of just what the doctor ordered. Now, obviously, you can't put all your eggs in the Josh Gordon basket, but last season puts up 18 yards per catch, almost 12 yards per attempt on throws from Brady to Gordon, third best in the NFL. It's at least exactly what they needed, right? And you kind of go from there and you see what happens. To me, you know, obviously Gronk did not have off-field issues, but there was kind of, you know, at some points of Gronk's career, this doubt of whether he was going to be able to play the full 16, 19 games because of injury, you know? So this Gordon thing kind of puts in that kind of element of a little bit more margin of error because you have a guy that can be a big time playmaker. And that's great news for the Patriots, and obviously great news for Josh Gordon too, that he's in a place mentally where he feels like he can play football again. But let's talk about what this means for the rest of the depth chart, like what we just touched on. You know, now you have Gordon, you assume is a lock, Edelman, you have Jacoby Myers, who's, you know, just breaking out. And then you have also, I'm forgetting somebody, of
Philip
course.
Philip
Dorsett, Braxton Berrios, Mo Harris, who's hurt right now. N'Keal Harry. That's the other one I was forgetting. I was like, I know I'm forgetting somebody. Okay, so N'Keal Harry. So you have Edelman, Gordon, N'Keal Harry as your top three locks, I would say, on this roster right now. And then I think Jacoby Myers, if he's not a lock, he's 95% of the way there. He would have to do something really catastrophic at this point to not make the team. So are you going to carry five? Are you going to carry six? I think that that really opens the door to a guy like Braxton Berrios or Mo Harris to be kind of on the outside looking in. Maybe both of those guys are now on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think, you know, I may have jumped the gun a little bit on Berrios the first preseason game. He didn't really get separation this past week or this weekend. And so that's sort of a concern. You still like his punt return ability, which helps him in that cause. But I think neither of those guys can really sort of feel safe and secure at this point. Not that anybody does, you know how it is. But like, you know, I just feel like those guys are, you know, iffy now, you know. I would have felt a lot better about Berrios if Gordon wasn't on the team. And both of those guys are, you know, have flashed. But neither one of them have been so good that you feel the same way about them that you will about Myers. Myers consistently has produced. I even liked a little bit what he showed after the catch this weekend. You know what though? It's a good problem to have too many good players.
Yeah, honestly, this team is, and not to, you know, get all hyped up about this team in the preseason, but they have almost do have too many good players. And that does kind of make me think that maybe not a player like, you know, a Braxton Berrios, who probably doesn't have much trade value, but somebody here along the line, I think that has a little bit of trade value, could get traded to fill another hole because of how deep they are at certain positions. But, you know, just looking at the wide receiver depth chart, I have been working on a 53-man projection for this week, and I've tried everything to fit six, to fit seven wide receivers even on the roster, even, you know, only having one tight end or whatever the case may be. And every single time that you do it, no matter what way you slice it, you're cutting somebody that I just don't feel comfortable cutting in terms of trying to predict what they're going to do, but also just in general, you're going to have to cut kind of like a special teams guy like a Nate Ebner or a Brandon King, or you're going to have to only carry one tight end and three tackles. You know, there's no way really to fit all these receivers now with Gordon back in the mix on this roster. So with Berrios, I think that his best chance, what you mentioned, was just his punt return ability. That adds a lot of value, especially as a guy that can come in and be a reserve to Julian Edelman in that role and maybe take that role from Edelman during the regular season or during portions of the regular season to kind of lessen the blow on Edelman there in punt returns. But in terms of him as a receiver, Mo Harris is a better wide receiver right now than Braxton Berrios based off camp. So it's really just Mo Harris has the upper edge when it comes to receiving skills, but Berrios has the special teams edge. So I do wonder if Mo Harris gets back out there and starts fielding some punts or does some of those things to maybe try to get into that position. I know Jacoby Myers has fielded some punts too, but I don't really think that's going to be a strong suit of his. So that's a really interesting question, is how do the Patriots fit all these guys onto the roster? How many receivers do they end up carrying? I think we'll find that out, you know, shortly here, obviously in a couple of weeks, you know, as a deadline, but also just over the third and fourth preseason games, will figure out a lot based off of who's playing and when, you know.
Right.
If guys are playing late into the fourth preseason game, that usually does not bode well for them. But this is an interesting wrinkle in this roster that I don't know if a lot of people were really expecting Gordon to, A, not be suspended at all for any games, but B, be reinstated this quickly, this early on. Roger Goodell had 60 days to reinstate him, and he did it in about half of that. So it seems like this happened pretty quickly, at least from our perspective. The team was probably a little bit more prepared than us. But let's talk about the game, because that's, you know, Josh Gordon's fun and all, and but it's all kind of you know, fake right now, up in the sky to figure out what's going to happen with him. But with the game, I wanted to start with Isaiah Wynn. I think that that's probably the biggest takeaway from this game, even though he only played 19 snaps. He just looked ready, looked the part, I thought, for the most part. You know, obviously you can nitpick here and there about a few blocks or what have you. But overall, I thought that this was a promising and a welcome sight from Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah, I liked his footwork a lot. Especially
stood out at practice.
Yeah, like I didn't, you know, obviously see him in practice or anything like that. And this is the first action, you know, I've seen him in any NFL capacity. So, and especially given the injuries coming off with, you expect maybe that to be something that sort of comes along more slowly. But, you know, I liked, you know, how quickly he moved his feet. And, you know, where they were placed beneath him just so he could get a nice sort of base on everything. Yeah, especially in pass pro, you know, I think it's going to be tough to get around him. And he's got such a good sort of anchor to him that he'll be hard to bull rush too. So from the little I've seen, I liked, you know, I think he didn't look too far different from how he did at Georgia in terms of his strengths. And so, you know, it's not a good sample size in terms of big enough to really take too much away from. But I liked what I saw.
Yeah, it's a small sample size. I would say at practice, though, the footwork and just the way that he leverages blocks and gets underneath guys to anchor has always kind of been there whenever he's out there in practice. And really the only times that he gets into trouble in practice, I honestly can't think of a ton of times that he got into like really bad trouble. You know, you watch Isaiah Wynn practice and then you watch Dan Skipper practice and you're just watching two different caliber players. You know, it's pretty apparent who's the better guy. With Wynn in the game on Saturday, I think the biggest thing, like you pointed out, was the ability to anchor and really the really good grip strength that I don't think that we necessarily saw in full swing in practice that he kind of brought out in this game. He was latching on to guys in pass protection and he was punching guys right in the center of their chest. And when he got his hands on somebody, they were not moving. Like they couldn't counter. They couldn't get off of him. He was smothering those guys. That's a great sign. I mean, I think that the grip strength and his hand usage and then combined with his footwork is basically what we saw for the most part at Georgia. So I don't think that any of this is any big surprise or anything like that, at least to me. So I think that that's great news that everything is going from Georgia to practices now into games, even if it's preseason games.
Yeah, it's just, you know, given what we thought of, you know, Skipper's performances and stuff like that, it's really encouraging to see, you know, when getting on the field, looking like he's got it, and, you know, looking healthy enough to play. And so I think it's a sort of a big sigh of relief because, you know, I don't think their tackle depth really is good at all. So they need him healthy and they also need him to look that good. And, you know, it's a good first step for him.
Yeah. I mean, basically I think that their tackle depth, I'm pretty comfortable now with Isaiah Wynn as the starting left tackle and obviously Marcus Cannon on the right side, but their tackle depth in general is going to be a question mark until they add somebody there. You know, having Dan Skipper as your third tackle based off of what we've seen has been pretty rocky in preseason games against, you know, second, third, fourth string pass rushers. They have a big hole there. It doesn't need to be a Trent Williams, right? That's not what they need anymore. No. They just need a guy to come in that can be that third tackle. I don't think that Yadni Kajust is going to play at all this year. Even if he does, it's not going to be – I don't think he's going to be ready to be that guy right away. So they really are kind of in the market. Maybe at roster cutdowns, some a team releases a guy that they like. Maybe they can make a trade for a veteran backup that doesn't take much compensation. Something like that, I think, to get a third or a fourth guy in here at tackle. Because otherwise, really, I mean, unless they see something in Skipper that we don't, which maybe they do, it's probably best bet to have Joe Tooney bump out to left tackle if anything were to happen to Win.
Yes.
You know, and not have Dan Skipper even go there. So I think that that's, you know, they have the interior depth to do that, but it's certainly not ideal because you would love to keep Tooney where he's at, where he's so good. So I think that that's probably the next step. Right now, the good news is that we can kind of check the box with Isaiah Wynn and just keep progressing with him. All right, let's talk about the quarterbacks. Obviously, not as good of a performance this week. The gushing of Jared Stidham probably won't stop, but maybe, you know, it will a little bit. But with Hoyer, I don't think we need to get too much into that. Obviously, you know, the interception was not a great throw. The first throw I thought was a little bit off too, but he made the right decisions. It just, the ball did not come out the way that he wanted it to on that interception, but the decisions were there. With Stidham, I thought the decision making and the ball security was pretty poor.
Yeah, but I still think he rallied well from from a bad start, and I kind of feel like the performance he had against Detroit sort of like, you know, shifted expectations a little too much.
We were expecting him to, you know, light the entire world on fire. Yeah,
right, exactly. So I'm still kind of like encouraged by the direction he's heading, to be honest. I think he was playing against better players this time. Towards the end of it, he started off slow, but then towards the end of it, he made some really nice throws. Especially the fade to the pylon there on that touchdown pass. I thought that was pretty. You know, listen, like the way I kind of look at it is, you know, we have to sort of judge him on sort of like a fair amount of progress, as opposed to kind of like, you know, if he was a first round draft pick, you know, like this is a guy that's probably not going to see the field this year anyway. You know, his numbers ended up being pretty good. And I like how he bounced back from some early sort of, you know, missed throws and sort of bad decisions and stuff like that. I at the end of the day, it wasn't obviously as good as he played against Detroit, but at the end of the day, I'm still kind of encouraged by what they have there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The encouraging signs are all still there, especially on that final drive, which I want to go over with you in a second. But I think the start of it, you know, with the three interceptable passes, the first one on the goal line to Saubert, he was just late to it. And that's something that we've seen a little bit with him, especially in the red zone where you have to make those quick decisions. In practice, we've seen it. We even saw it a little bit against Detroit. It was kind of masked by all the other good stuff, was that, you know, he isn't quite there to a point yet where he's seeing the field fast enough to make those lightning quick decisions to get to a second or third or a check down read like what Saubert was in that play and get the ball out on time and avoid risking it like he did there. That's, you know, going to come in time. That's a rookie type thing that will come over time. The other two, I think, are just ones that you can't have. You know, you just can't have him. You can't have him kind of just throwing the ball towards the sideline like he did under pressure on the last one. That was eerily reminiscent of Tom Brady's interception against Pittsburgh last year. So,
right.
You know, it's a good example of, you know, it even happens to the greatest quarterback of all time. But the one that he tried to throw, the hook that he tried to throw in the flat, he guessed. He flat out guessed. Based off the coverage, he assumed that the corner was going to be playing off and he wasn't going to jump that route. He didn't even confirm that the corner was staying back and not going to jump that route. And he just threw it out there and it should have been a pick six. So those are ones that, you know, you just can't have. You don't need to make a big deal out of it, but just, you know, let's not make those kind of decisions with the football going forward. But then on that final drive, the game-winning drive, not the final drive. He went 7 for 7 for 89 yards on a 99-yard touchdown drive to put the Patriots ahead and win the game. So, yeah, he did it against a bunch of backups and what have you, but he went 10 yards to Jacoby Myers on play action, another 10-yard pass to Jacoby Myers, a 17-yarder to Dontrell Inman, RIP, a 21-yarder to Ryan Izzo up the middle of the field, then an 8-yard dump off to Damian Harris, then the 23-yard touchdown pass to Damon Patterson. 7 for 7, 89 yards, 3 or 4 high-level throws mixed in there. And one other thing that I want to mention, but I just want to get your impressions. You know, you kind of mentioned about that drive, but those are the high-level throws that are making us optimistic about his future, and we're saying to ourselves, they probably have something here when you see a quarterback do stuff like that.
Yeah, because like the thing is I didn't think he was really even capable of that coming out of the draft. You know,
I think that the draft coverage of him and ourselves, and like everyone, just trashed on him way too much. Like we all missed.
Yeah, 100%. I was wrong about this guy. Even though he's not, I'm not saying he's like going to be a Hall of Famer or anything.
No, but he's way better.
He's way better than I expected. So I was definitely fooled, I guess, by his senior year. So some of those throws were really nice. Like, I mean, you know, that fade is like a really tough throw to get right. I mean, that's a lot of teams try that, and it's almost never, timed right or perfectly placed, or, you know, the corner will have more of a shot of it than you want him to, or it goes too far. He just sort of laid it up perfectly and, you know, to the place where, you know, Patterson could get it, and it's just a really pretty play. And so that's kind of what you're looking for. You're obviously looking for all the other stuff too, but in terms of being able to make throws like that in a preseason game and stuff like that, that kind of flash, that kind of potential, you love to see stuff like that. And he was, you know, in command the whole drive. And again, when he sort of starts off with things that he is sure to be, you know, sort of chewed out for earlier in the game, you don't want him to sort of pout and let that get the best of him. He turned around and then, you know, played his best football of the night. And so I think that's also something like a little intangible that you look for. I like that a lot.
Yeah, with those intangibles too, it's twofold. It's the ability to bounce back from some rough throws earlier on in the game, but it's also the ability to be clutch. I mean, that was a clutch drive, you know, and I know it's preseason, but that was, you know, when you watch that, and I'm not a big guy in terms of like intangibles or things that you can't measure, but a lot of coaches that you talk about just having that it factor late in games where you play your best in the biggest moments. We see it all the time with Tom Brady, and Jared Stidham stepped up. You know, he stepped up in that moment and he played his best football, like you said, and he drove him right down the field and he won the game. I mean, that's at some level you need to kind of respect that and have that intangible factor be a thing. The other thing I wanted to point out before we move on was just the way that they've been using him. Obviously at Auburn, I'd have to ask him, but I cannot imagine that he took any snaps from under center in the Auburn offense. Just the way that they run the show there, that's just not what they do. Here in New England, he's running a lot of snaps under center, and then specifically he's running a lot of play action passes under center. And I think that is, you know, he's 9 for 12 and averaging over 12 yards per attempt off of play action in the preseason, which are some great numbers. And I think that is a really interesting way of using him. Obviously the Patriots love play action with Brady also, but he has the big arm. And then he also has mobility to maybe do some design bootleg stuff and other things of that nature when he is the starter, when they start game planning and scripting plays just for him. So those things I kind of look at and I say those fit the scheme well, it fit what they do well already, and it also fits his skill set really well. So putting him under center, obviously he can still play in shotgun and do that well too, but the play action passes from under center I think are a really good wrinkle for him, because I highly doubt that he ran any back to the line of scrimmage play action under center at Auburn. Maybe he did, but I just can't imagine that he did. So
they did some under center stuff, but it wasn't like traditional stuff. But The thing I like about him too, sorry to cut you off, but there were a couple times where he felt the pressure early and got out of the pocket and made a little something happen. You've seen a little bit of that. There was one play in particular, I think it was out of an empty set, where Skipper was supposed to cut his man and he just whiffed. And the defensive end came in on him, and Stidham was able to get outside, and I forget what the result of the play was, but it wasn't a sack. And, you know, that's something that comes down to feel in the pocket. It's sort of a natural thing, and it also sort of develops over time the more reps you get. But those little things like that are also kind of what I like, and he's got sort of the wheels to help him in that area.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's so in contrast to what everything that you read about him leading up to the draft from the pre-draft process. Everybody that you read in the pre-draft process said that he had, you know, happy feet in the pocket, that he was afraid of pressure, that he was bailing out of pockets too early because he was afraid of getting hit, all these types of things. He's standing in the pocket. He's standing in against pressure. He's getting out of the pocket at the right times. You know, he's not just taking off for the sake of taking off. And you know, he's making plays with his legs. I don't think that the plays with his legs and the scrambles are going to be a major part of who he is. But even just a little bit of that is good. And like I said, I think that they can design it into some bootlegs and stuff like that, too, that will help him out and help him make downfield throws with that big arm. So I think that the mobility is a nice little wrinkle that, you know, we're not so used to with Tom Brady under center. All right, let's talk about Winovich, who obviously just is setting the world on fire along with Jacoby Myers. He had 8 pressures in the game last night, 3 run stops. He's got 12 quarterback disruptions already for the preseason, which leads the NFL right now. There's a couple of games still going on today and tomorrow, but for the most part, I think he's going to stay atop that list unless somebody just goes bonkers tonight. But I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing with Winovich is that it's more than just the hustle. You know, the hustle is one element of it, and the hustle is something that is obvious, the high motor, and you can see it when he's running 20 yards down the field to make tackles on running backs or coming all the way across the field to push the quarterback out of bounds or what have you. And there were points of the game last night where he was moving at a different speed than everybody else on the field. So that's really great to see. But it's also the intelligence and the repertoire of moves that he has at the line of scrimmage that is really impressive.
Yeah, it's a phrase that we've used a lot, but he's got a plan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He does. Yes.
You know, he doesn't just do one thing. You know, a lot of pass rushers are, you know, they're good if they, you know, try an outside move or bull rush or, you know, try to swim inside. He tries all that stuff. And, you know, and even when he doesn't get like a, you know, whatever, you know, however you measure a pressure, you know, like even if he doesn't get that, he's making that tackle work. He's making that player work. Even there was a play there was a running play to the opposite side where he beat the tackle to the inside. And if he was just, you know, a step quicker, I mean, it would have been impossible for him to make the play, but he got to where he would have been if, you know, the running back had been just a little bit inside, he would have made the play from the backside. And so he's, you know, I love his hands. I love how active his hands are. I love how low he gets. I mean, I feel like at some point he's going to get one of those penalties where he does tackle the quarterback too low.
Yeah.
but he just does a little bit of everything well. And like he goes in knowing what he's going to do, and the tackle doesn't really know, having watched this kid, what's coming, because he can do so many different things.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Mars, I believe it was, the Titans right tackle that he just absolutely beat like a punching bag last night, is not, you know, going to be a starting tackle for the Titans this year. But at the same time, the thing that stood out, like you said, was that he has a plan. That's a perfect way of putting it. So early on in the game, Chase comes on the field his first couple of snaps, and he blows by Mars with his speed rush, right? He's turning the corner on him over and over again, and he's getting into the backfield. So then what does Mars do? He takes three hard steps backwards to set against the speed to stay in front of him because that's his only hope. And so what does Chase do? He lets him go, you know, past the quarterback, pushes him past the quarterback, slams on the brakes, climbs up the pocket, and sacks Tannehill. You know, so that he has a counter to that, right? So he knows that these tackles are saying to themselves, he can really turn the corner. That bend, that arc around the edge, he's really, really good at that. We saw it on the very first sack that he had against Detroit last week where he just turned the corner in, you know, 2 seconds and was in the backfield. Now the tackles are going to start thinking about that and knowing that, hey, that speed is really difficult to deal with, especially when he can turn the corner and he can bend the arc like that so that he limits the surface area. Like you said, he gets so low and he also turns his body towards the quarterback. He flips his hips towards the quarterback. And by doing that, there's no surface area. There's no place for the tackle to put his hands on him. So when he does that over and over again, and now he's going to counter you with something inside or back up the field, now you're, you know, there's a lot of different things that you got to worry about if you're an offensive tackle. And that's not something that just comes from hustle. That's not that really that typical of most rookie pass rushers. You know, Derek Rivers is a good example of this. He was drafted in the same round as Chase Winovich. Derek Rivers came in here and he had one move and he had no plan. Right. And it was, and that's why he hasn't been able to get on the field. Now, Winovich comes here and he's got multiple moves and he's taking notes about tackles and how they're setting in practice and then having it apply to the games. And he's studying film on these guys and he's going in with a plan and he's executing that plan at a high level. And against the run, too, he has a great job of really recognizing run blocking schemes and kind of blowing up a few running plays there where he just outran the scheme because he knew what was coming. You know, he had that one on a little zone toss play to the outside where the tackle, the goal of the tackle there is to crack down on the end with his hand in the dirt and then work to Winovich. But Winovich was so quick upfield off the ball that the fullback ended up having to try to block Winovich and he whiffed on him because it was an awkward position for him to be in. So these little things, you know, you just see the intelligence, you see the quick processing skills, and then you add those things to the athletic ability and the hustle, and you're starting to talk about a guy that is going to probably contribute to this team this season on day one, at least in sub rush packages, and then obviously on special teams too. You know, he's a guy that's been playing a ton on special teams also. So this is a two or maybe hopefully a three down player down the road. And I mean, all four downs he could potentially play down the road too, if he can develop a little bit more strength at the point of the attack. But even still, if he's able to just slip those blockers or get upfield faster than the big guys can get their hands on him, it might not matter that he's not, you know, 265 pounds. So yeah. It's pretty crazy.
It does kind of make you wonder how he fell that far to begin with, because he had a great college career. He did well at the combine, and he's, you know, obviously, you know, checks a lot of the boxes in terms of intelligence and stuff like that. You know, I know a lot of people were very high on him and excited when he did come to the Pats, but you know, you just wonder sometimes how a guy even falls that far to begin with.
I think it was two things. I think the first thing is that he's undersized for his position. You know, even if with his athletic ability, he's, you know, what, 250 pounds, something like that, 245 maybe even. So he's undersized. I think the other thing is that he is a perfect example of a guy that just had a terrible, he's 256 at the combine, a little bigger than I thought, but still in the 26th percentile for weight for an edge defender. So definitely undersized. But the other thing is along kind of with Myers a little bit, but I would say mostly with Winovich, it's reputation, right? Like you hear about all these guys that they talk about, and it's like everybody just labeled Winovich as like this high motor player that wasn't that great of an athlete, but was, you know, his effort was tremendous and he tried really hard. And I don't think that a lot of guys, you know, a lot of scouts thought that that might translate directly to the pro game where you really need to be bigger, faster, stronger. And it turns out that he went and he goes and he kills the combine. And I still don't think that the high motor kind of label really even brushed off even in the draft. And also, like, did people not watch him just, you know, with all the pass rush moves and all the different stuff that he can do with his hands? Because he was doing all of that at Michigan, too. So,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. And we both said it when they drafted him. He had a better season last year than Rashawn Gary did. I mean, he was just a better football player than Rashawn Gary was last year at Michigan. And obviously Rashawn Gary goes, you know, top 12, I think it was. He went to Green Bay at like 11 or 12. So it's it's an interesting conversation. And the Patriots just seem to always luck out with these guys falling right into their laps.
And I think you hit the nail on the head with the numbers in terms of like the size. I think that must have been it.
Yeah, when you watch him out there, I mean, obviously he's not a little person, but when you watch him out there, he's definitely on the smaller side. Like, he definitely looks like a guy that's a little bit undersized. And I know a lot of people want to compare him to like Ninkovich and Vrabel because of the spot that he's playing in the defense, but, and not to, you know, put him in Canton or anything yet, but the guy that he actually reminds me a lot more of is like a Clay Matthews. Like, if we're going to compare him to Ninkovich and Vrabel, then I think we can compare him to Clay Matthews. And he plays the game, and Clay Matthews is a little bit more undersized like Winovich was. He plays the game a lot more like Clay Matthews did than like a guy like Vrabel or Ninkovich did. Those guys are bigger. They won more with power at the point of attack. They weren't quite as twitchy or explosive off the ball as Winovich was. But Clay Matthews is a little bit like that. So I would say if you're going to make any type of comparison to compare him to a Pro Bowler like those three guys were, then I would go Clay Matthews. Let's talk about...
And because of the hair, too.
Yeah, both have the hair. That's true, too. Let's talk about Juwan Williams, who I want to save Damian Harris for last because I think that one's we both really like Damian Harris. Juwan Williams last week in Nashville at the joint practices and then in the game, like Corey Davis is going to be seeing Juwan Williams in his nightmares for a couple days because at joint practices, Juwan Williams really held his own and actually kind of shut Corey Davis down a little bit in some of the one-on-ones especially. And then he goes into the game and shuts Corey Davis down again in the game on two targets with two pass breakups. They only completed one out of five targets at Juwan Williams in that game. And all of a sudden, a guy that I think, you know, early on in training camp, and I get that, you know, we all kind of fall victim to the Patriots second round cornerback defensive back curse, you know, the guys like Duke Dawson and Jordan Richards and Cyrus Jones and the list goes on and on, Razi Dowling, and everybody just kind of thinks about those guys. And when Juwan, you know, first reports come out from me and everybody else that he's struggling a little bit in practice, we're like, here we go again. You know, another second round defensive back that's not going to pan out. All of a sudden, he's starting to play a lot better now.
Yeah, I think even in the first preseason game, as he had that awful penalty and like kind of, you know, looked a little stiff in coverage and stuff like that. But even in that first preseason game, he gave you something against the run.
Yeah.
He looked like a physical player. And I think if you kind of got to see what the Patriots were hoping to see when they drafted him is somebody that could match up well with a bigger receiver and not somebody who's necessarily like one of these small, quick guys that would be a really bad matchup for him.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the pass breakup he had where they reviewed it and everything like that, I thought that was a really nice play. You know, I think if, you know, I think he's starting to, you know, get used to the NFL speed and stuff like that. And I just, you know, the more he gets reps against better players like that, the better. I think this will give him a lot of confidence because he played so well. And you know, you want a guy who can tackle that well and be so good in the run game and be, you know, somebody who's a plus against receivers like that. And I think he's sort of starting to come into his own, and I wasn't too discouraged by that first preseason game just because it was, you know, his first pro action, and he actually did show something in terms of his physicality. And, you know, you're going to need that. And especially when you're going up against bigger guys, you know, being able to hold your own and jam them at the line and stuff like that. Obviously still, like, you know, when he goes up against a faster receiver and he doesn't get that jam, you worry about his ability to sort of keep up and not give up those, you know, sort of go routes and stuff like that. But other than that, I'm pretty encouraged by what I saw.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with him from the differences in practice. So the first week of training camp, I think it was, maybe in the first weekend of padded practices, they were doing an 11-on-11 drill, and Philip Dorsett beat him pretty badly on a deep post that went for a long touchdown, and he got burnt on the play. And I was like, okay, but he's not going to be covering Philip Dorsett in a game.
Exactly.
And if he is, then that's on the coaching staff that they're putting him in that spot. So that I wasn't worried about. You know, I know he's not going to cover a 4-3 guy like Dorsett in a game. Then we get, you know, a little bit, we keep on going a little bit here. And the thing that I've noticed really the biggest difference, and I wonder, I have to ask him, but I do wonder if this is a little bit of Stephon Gilmore helping him out a little, is that he's a lot more patient now at the line of scrimmage than he was early on in training camp, where he's really kind of directing guys, staying square longer at the line of scrimmage. He's allowing some of these guys to make the first move and then just pushing them in a direction that he can control them in, and with his jams and with his length and physicality. That way there, with the patience, he's not opening his gate into where he's, you know, already in a full sprint early on. He's buying himself a little bit of time is what he's doing, you know, and he's allowing himself a little bit of extra room for error to be able to react to some of the quicker routes or the longer routes with some speed that some of these NFL receivers are going to run. And then the other thing that he's doing is he's starting to make plays on the football. And we saw that obviously on Saturday night. And he made that one play. The first one I thought was nice. The second one I thought was really kind of encouraging, because he was in off coverage, which is not supposed to be his forte. In at Vandy, when he was, every time he was in off coverage, he really did not look very good because he couldn't get his hands on guys. And then he was in off coverage against Corey Davis, and he transitions his hip at the top of the drop, and he drives on the ball, and he uses those long arms to get into the passing lane and disrupt at the catch point. And you're like, that's why they drafted this guy, right? You know, those are the tools that they wanted, and this is what they wanted out of him. And then the last point, when you stand next to the guy or you just see him in the huddle, he is massive. Like, I don't think that, like, even his listed box score, like, does it justice. He looks like a linebacker. Like, he's standing next to guys that are big linebackers like Juwan Bentley or Jamie Collins, and he might be bigger, just taller, obviously, and just bigger. And he's a really big dude that's playing cornerback, and he can really move. He, you know, the more, I know I made the Brandon Browner comparison already, but that's really the closest guy that I can come up with that has that kind of size and is still able to move like a defensive back. So I think that there's some reasons, obviously, you know, like we just talked about, to be really optimistic of where Juwan Williams is heading. And the good thing about the Corey Davis matchup, like you said, was that was the perfect example of the type of guy that he should be covering, and he held his own against him. He more than held his own. So all week long, he really, I think, might have even had the upper hand against a pretty good receiver. So those are all good things to take away from Juwan Williams. It was his hometown, Nashville. He went to Vanderbilt. He had a ton of family and friends there all week long. So, you know, we'll see when the extra hype from his family being there, you know, isn't there. You know, we'll see what happens. But I think that overall, just very optimistic. I mean, I'm writing about all these rookies. We're going to talk about Damian Harris, too, here in a second. I'm writing about all these rookies tomorrow, and just the influx of – this is like a youth movement. There's like a ton of influx of young talent. They have 38 players on the 90-man roster that this is either their rookie or second year in the league. And 19 of those are draft picks. You know, and then you have guys like J.C. Jackson and Jacoby Myers as undrafted players that are all obviously good football players. So they're going to have, you know, they have the seven guys they drafted in the top 100 over the last 2 years, three first round picks, a couple of undrafted free agents findings, guys like Juwan Bentley, who they found in the fifth round. I mean, this is, there's going to be at least seven or eight, if not more, players that are going to make impacts this year that are first or second year players in the league. So the days of, like, you know, the Patriots don't have any young talent, the roster is aging, like, that's over. Like, they have plenty of young talent now. And Damian Harris is the next one that we're going to talk about. Obviously, the running back from Alabama, I think a lot of people were pretty high on the pick at the time, even though there were some people that were a little bit surprised that they took another running back. The player himself, I don't think any of us had any doubts, was a good player.
Right, and he kind of showed In my opinion, he looked better than he had in a lot of games that he did in Alabama. You know what I mean? But there were a lot of similar things that we saw there in terms of the running between the tackles and not sort of that vision in very tight quarters.
Yeah.
That ability to, when there's a lot around you, to find the space that is the most advantageous for you and hit it fast and hit it downhill. And he was, you're not arm tackling this guy either.
No.
He looked really powerful out there. And again, you're looking at a guy who was never at Alabama really the most talented back on the roster. He was always good, but he was always sharing carries. And he was, there were games he started and everything like that, but he was never like, a 30, 20 carry a game guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that helps him coming into the NFL because obviously he's going to be part of a rotation here. And he's not going to have, a lot of wear and tear on him. But I just love the way he runs. He finishes his runs always really well. He's physical. He's not a burner. He's not going to turn a 10-yard gain into a 70-yard gain, but he's going to turn, a 7-yard gain into a 12 and 15-yard gain.
Yeah.
I just love the way he runs. Honestly, I liked him coming out of college, but I'm pleasantly surprised by how quickly he looked good the other night.
Yeah, how quickly he's picked up the whole thing, honestly, the whole system. I mean, the ability to already be catching balls out of the backfield as well as he has. He is light years ahead of Sony Michel in the passing game in terms of where Sony was his rookie season. Like, he might even be still ahead of Sony Michel now based off of what we've seen in practice. He is just a much more natural receiver and a much more natural after the catch too, in terms of what he can do with the ball in his hands than Sony ever was. I mean, yeah, you come out in your first preseason game and you're flexing out wide and you're catching dump offs out of the backfield and making guys miss. He, to me, the contact balance, which is a fancy term for saying running through arm tackles and still being able to stay balanced and stay on your feet, and also the vision combined with the receiving skills. I like look at him, and obviously he, like you said, he's not a burner and he's not anywhere near as explosive as like a Deion Lewis, but on the scale of Deion Lewis to Sony Michel, he's much closer to Deion Lewis. He's much more, he's got a lot more wiggle in that short area and he's got a little bit more versatility to his game. So I think that the good news is that on one hand, Sony is obviously still going to be one of the lead, bell cows of this running game. And he's going to handle a lot of it between the tackles reps. But then you bring in Damian Harris, who has a little bit different of a style to him. It's similar, but it's different. And that's obviously good. But the other element of it, too, is the passing game. And I really would like to see personnel groupings where they have James White and Damian Harris on the field at the same time. Because then you have two guys that can really impact the passing game. You can move both of them all around the formation. James White, obviously super capable of playing in the slot or out wide. And I think both of those guys can run the ball too. So yeah. There's a ton of things that you can do out of that kind of set. And with kind of the thin, they're a little bit thin at tight end, obviously. So let's just go wide receivers and running backs all season long. And not even worry about the tight end, because when you put James White and you put Damian Harris on the field at the same time, and you have Sony being the guy that's like more like the first and second down back, you have a really, really good backfield. I mean, probably the best backfield in the NFL, for what it's worth. I think that there's other teams that might have high level running backs that are better than the guys the Patriots have, like Saquon Barkley is a better back, or Todd Gurley, or Le'Veon, or, Zeke Elliott. But in terms of depth, versatility, just the different skill sets that they have back there, we didn't even bring up Rex Burkhead, who's an NFL caliber back also. So they have four backs really that I think could, serve as a high role in a committee and on other teams that are playing as, one of a four back committee here. I mean, this is definitely, I think, the deepest backfield in the NFL.
Yeah. And Brandon Bolden, baby.
Yeah, forget about Bolden.
So it, again, you know, who comes off then? You know, if you want to create an extra spot for a receiver or somewhere else. If it were
not going to be Harris, I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, I like, you know, if it's, say if it's between Harris and Burkett, I want Harris.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be Harris.
So, but again, you know, a lot of people don't want, you know, Burkett to be cut, obviously. So, you know, who knows? But, like, you just got to be encouraged by the depth. I was really just encouraged by, you know, the first real, you know, action like that for a guy like Harris. He looked really good. You know, and he looked versatile. He just looked like he belonged. Yeah. You know, he did not look like a rookie at all. You know, say what you want about whether you like this back better than the other, but there was more of an adjustment period, I felt like, for Sony when he got into the league in terms of just looking good, you know.
Those were against starters, right?
Right,
in
right.
The first two games of the regular season last year. But first two games of the regular season last year, I mean, not us, but other people were, like, really piling on Sony, like, as, like, a bust already, you know, because of how he looked.
Right. I just feel like, you know, the skills that Harris have really translate well in terms of, you know, like, there were like, his jump cuts and stuff like that. Yeah. And just his, you know.
His lateral movement is much better than Sony's.
Yeah, like, I feel like he can do a lot of different things well. Now, obviously, there's things that Sony can do that I don't see Harris doing. Like,
yeah.
You know, I feel like Sony, if he gets a crease, he can like, break off a much.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, he can make a much bigger run. But honestly, you got a lot of great versatility with these, you know, with these backs. And, you know, it was a really good pick, really solid pick. You know, people didn't expect them to take a running back. And they explained that their explanation was, well, he was too good not to take, basically. You know, he was the best guy on the board, basically, for them, something to that effect. And, you know, I think, you know, at least to me so far, you know, I think it was a solid pick so far.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I would love to know where Damian Harris was on their board overall, because I, based off of their evaluation of Sony, evaluating him as, you know, probably a second round talent, first round pick status, I would assume that Harris was probably like a top 50 player on their board, you know, just based off of what he can do and how similarities that he has to Sony and even some of the differences. So, you know, this was a guy that I think that they really felt like they stole, and it's kind of showing a little bit already. And, you know, you mentioned the jump cuts and the lateral agility. I think that that's on a level that I was even higher than what I thought. And then on the big 20-yard run that he had, you know, to already be in your first NFL game behind this offensive line for the first time in a game, to be able to see the cutback lane like that as seamlessly as he did was pretty impressive. I mean, there's not a ton of rookie running backs, I would say, that are, you know, third round picks, guys that aren't, you know, these first round Saquon Barkley type talents, that are taking a play that's supposed to hit left with a pulling guard and the fullback leading through the line, the whole nine yards, everything's going left, right? And that, because of that, the entire Titans defense was going left too. He read all the hats inside to the left, out leveraging them, and he cut it back and he broke into daylight. And I was like, that's a very impressive run for a rookie. You know, yeah. That's not something, that type of vision is not necessarily normal or doesn't come innate. I don't think it came innate to Sony, you know, behind this, you know, offensive line. And he was kind of learning the schemes and picking up on the gap schemes because he's such a zone heavy runner at Georgia. And one thing I talked to Damian about when they drafted him was how Alabama is such a multiple team, just like the Patriots. You know, Alabama, they run man schemes, they run zone schemes, they're doing everything just like the Pats are. So he's run behind it all before, and Sony was really mostly running behind zone. So I think that that, you know, adjustment was a little bit more for him, like you said. But, you know, I think that, like I said, we just spent the entire podcast talking about rookies and second-year players. You know, Stidham, Wynn, Harris, Winovich, Juwan Williams. We're not even mentioning any of the veterans on this team who are obviously aren't playing. So that's why we're not mentioning them, but you add those guys back into the mix, you know, we haven't even talked about that yet. I mean, listen, I get that this team maybe doesn't have like the top end talent like some of the other teams do. I mean, if you want to make that argument, but this 53-man roster is going to be the best roster in the league. If not, you know, I think really only Philadelphia has a chance of saying that they have a better 1 through 53 than the Patriots.
Yeah. And one last note on Harris is sometimes when you see a player in college and you watch him a lot and you see his build and how he compares, he looks like a big guy. And then when you see him, his first preseason game against NFL players, like, wow, he's so much smaller than he looked. But actually with Harris, you know, he doesn't look small at all. I expected him to like kind of shrink in view, you know, a little bit, but he looks super well put together in terms of a guy that can, you know, really handle a workload. So that's with that. And your point about the, you know, we're just talking about the rookies here and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, you know, with that's, you know, the guys that are basically playing right now, but this roster really should be pretty good. Especially what I love their defense. I really love it. Like the guys that aren't even playing right now. It's just going to be like, I think like just right from the start, because, you know, there's been years when the defense takes, you know, 4 or 5, even 7 or 8 games to become the type of unit that you saw at the end of last year.
Yeah.
There's a lot of years like that, it feels like. I feel like this year is going to be, from the start, a really, really dominant unit. And I think, yeah, I'm just sort of excited to see what it looks like when they kind of get everybody on the same field.
Yeah. Well, in practice, you know, just quickly, in Tennessee, there was a 7-on-7 period of the Titans starters versus the Patriots starters. And the Patriots linebackers and defensive backs, 5 plays in a row, forced a near pick, 3 throwaways, and then a ball in the dirt from Mariota. And a 7-on-7 drill, you know? Yeah. And it's just, you're watching this and you're like, you know, 7-on-7 and these types of one-on-ones, all these practice drills heavily favor the offense. Like, 100%. If you can't get open in a 7-on-7 drill during a joint practice, then, you know, the defense must be really good, or maybe you should get some new receivers. You know, it's one or the other, or maybe a little bit of both. And the Patriots defense really controlled the entire week against Tennessee. And then obviously, even in the game, the backups held them to 17 points and just over 200 yards of offense. And the Titans quarterbacks only averaged like 6.5 yards per attempt. You know, it was another kind of really good defensive performance. They got after the quarterback. They pressured all 3 quarterbacks 50% of the time. You know, 50% pressure rate is not sustainable, but that's still pretty darn impressive for a preseason game. So, you know, all things are pointing upwards for this entire team. You know, you get Josh Gordon back, and for the offense, that's a big boost. And obviously this defense already looks great. And I think that, you know, we're all going to be in for a good season. Do you have anything that you want to plug?
Let's see. There's going to be a lot more of this countdown for the MIA teams. Going to build that up towards the season. I have more observations from the BC scrimmage that I went to.
Nice.
On Saturday. That's interesting. They have a kid who's a freshman, and people have talked about it on Twitter, but it's warranted. He's this true freshman from Florida who is like a very underrated kid. He had a lot of like offers and stuff, but in terms of like the scouting sites and stuff like that, he wasn't all that hyped. His name's Zay Flowers. He's about 5'10", 170, but like really quick, fast, slippery, like the type of guy that BC hasn't had in a little bit. BC really heavily recruited this kid, Mike Sanders, still from Everett, who ended up going to Michigan. And they were able to get Flowers, though, and they're really sort of a similar type of player. You know, in a different offense, he would be probably a slot receiver. You know, BC is usually 2 tight ends and doesn't use a lot of slots. But I'm very curious to see how this guy looks once the season starts, because they're going to have to use him. Like, they've got more experienced guys at receiver and stuff like that. They've got good players, but this dude is going to get on the field. He made some really, really nice plays. And again, like, this guy, Tyler Vrabel, son of, is going to be starting at left tackle as a redshirt freshman. And here's the thing, man. I saw him in the spring, and I was like, oh, this kid's good, and I heard good things, and like, but he's already bigger, like, yeah, in terms of like his arms and stuff like that. It's amazing how much these guys get stronger. He's an NFL prospect in terms of like just down the line. I'd be shocked if he doesn't get drafted or something like that. I mean, injuries aside, all that stuff. And BC also, you know, they got AJ Dillon and guys like that. But another guy to keep an eye out for, they've got a lot of good tight ends, and Tommy Sweeney's balling out for the Buffalo Bills right now. This guy, Hunter Long, 6'5", 255, really looks the part. He's getting open a lot and catching a lot of balls. So they've got some talent again, and they open with Virginia Tech, so they jump right into it.
Well, Vrabel's son has some good genes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Vrabel's vicinity, obviously, down in Nashville, and, you know, he's a big guy. Obviously, I knew that, you know, from watching him play, but he's a big dude, and, you know, you can tell that he was, you know, an NFL linebacker, so I'm sure that, you know, his son is going to be a pretty big dude also. And nice. BC, friends of the analytics committee, obviously, those two tight end sets. All the you talk to all the analytics people, it's 12 personnel. So what do the Patriots do? They go draft a bunch of running backs. You know, that's, you know, screw your 12 personnel. We're going 21. We're flipping it. We're doing it the other way. Or we're going four wide receiver and running everybody over. You know, that's our plan.
Yeah, just actually plug a story I wrote a couple, or, you know, I think either a couple weeks ago or last week. It was about BC's use of the tight end and the 12 personnel, and how they are not, you know, using, they use them the way like Iowa uses their tight ends. They still like inline blocking tight ends. And
you analytics know, the, community says boo.
Yeah, I know, whatever. I remember talking to the tight ends coach from BC, and how he used to be Frank Leonard. He was a Patriots scout from 2004 to 2006. He still has a lot of connections to the scouting community. And the one thing he hears the most is it's so hard for us to find an inline blocking tight end in the college game anymore. There's some programs that still do it. Obviously, Iowa's one of them. He said that when Brian Daboll came and talked to him the last time, he was raving about Tommy Sweeney because, hey, this kid can block.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, it's, you know, and honestly, like, I'm not saying, like, you know, this is, you know, where people get misunderstood. I'm not saying if you go to another offense, you can't be an NFL tight end, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're good enough, if you're good enough, you can play anywhere, right? Like,
yeah.
But like, in terms of the sliding in from one to the next, you know, there's certain offenses that ask you to do more things that happen in the pro game than the college game still, even though there is still some the pro game is sort of changing along with the college one a little bit more now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, not to go on a full tangent here about college football, but I do think that there's more trickling up now than there ever has been, where the pro game is actually taking from the college game. Obviously, we have, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and all the air raid stuff that's come to the NFL. But the two tight end sets is really, you know, something that's come from college a little bit too. And one thing that, you know, BC does it differently because they have, you know, more inline blocking tight ends. But like a program like Oklahoma, they have two tight end sets, but one of their tight ends is an inline blocker and the other is really more like a jumbo receiver, more like an H-back, a guy that's just going to move around and, you know, do that kind of thing. And they are just shredding teams with those two tight end sets because they can run out of them and they can pass out of them. And that kind of H-back tight end is such a big pass weapon that it's difficult to stop. That was kind of Mark Andrews's role before he got drafted, obviously, by Baltimore. So, it's going to all trickle up. And the guy, I can't remember who the guy is that they have in that role right now, but he's going to get drafted to, I think, either this year or next year. So, that's kind of the way of the future. Is these, offenses with two tight ends or heavy personnel groupings in general, like the Patriots run with a fullback or two running backs or whatever. And then just passing out of those sets is kind of where it's going. Or there, teams like Cliff Kingsbury is just going full air raid and running four wide receivers and just lighting the whole thing up. So it's one or the other. But
and defenses have to prepare for both now.
Yeah.
So that makes it, that just trickles down to how you draft linebackers and safeties and stuff like that because, and all that stuff. So it makes for sort of a larger conversation that we're already
having. It's crazy. This is like an off-season topic, obviously, that we could dive into, next off-season and just talk about how offensive innovation. And I think that what doesn't get talked about enough is how that's forcing the hand of the defense. And how can defenses keep up, and what are the type of the schemes and what are the type of ways you mentioning, drafting players that are, I think what you're kind of going for is like a hybrid player, right? Like a guy that's like built more like in between a safety and a linebacker, but he's playing, more of a linebacker role, like what Patrick Chung kind of does for the Patriots, or guys like Kyle Van Noy, who's kind of like that hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker type player. That's kind of where the defenses have gone, and I think that the schemes, the coverage systems need to improve or at least do a little bit more also, to kind of keep up as well. But yeah, we just went like 20 minutes on that, which is what we tend to do. This is why people listen. I mean, I'm sure like 90% of people are already stopped the podcast, but those that waited, you got some great talk about college football and schematics and the future.
College football, which starts on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, let's go. It's football is here. On clnsmedia.com, got my 10 things for the game last night, or the game against the Titans, if you're not listening to this on Sunday night. I also have advanced stats reports up. I'm writing something for Monday that should be up Monday morning about the rookies. Well, all the guys that we just talked about, put it into word form and just talk about just how impressive and how exciting this group of young players is. It's been a while, I would say, that we've had this much influx of young, talented players on the Patriots. And we've kind of gotten by for a while now with Brady and Edelman and Gronk and all these guys. And the next wave is coming. The next wave is here, I would say. It's not even coming. So be on the lookout for that. And then a quick turnaround for the Patriots, right back at it on Thursday night in third preseason game against Carolina. I would expect to see the starting offense and defense get some run on Thursday night. That's usually what they do. I think Brady, likes to play a little bit, but they did have the joint practices. So I don't know how much they're going to play. In years past, Brady's played like into the second half at times in that third preseason game. With the joint practices back-to-back weeks, I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but I do think that you're going to see a little bit of some of the starters on offense and defense. Brady, starting offensive line, hasn't really played together yet. And guys on defense like Gilmore and Devin McCourty and Hightower and Van Noy and Chung, none of those guys have played yet. So maybe we'll see a little bit of that. We'll be back next week on the podcast to recap that game, do the same drill that we just did. We're going to be here all season doing it and talking about college football and the innovation of offense. So be ready for that. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchner. I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.